When I was around 10 years old, I remember cracking open the TV guide to find what I wanted to watch. You see, kids, back in the day, we had to wait for a specific time to watch something, and the only way we knew when and where to watch was to open a magazine made out of actual physical paper and look it up. Imagine something akin to research for your school thesis, poring through microfiche and the Dewey Decimal System, except this was for everything you did all the time. It's like your life was basically a nonstop escape room, minus any theme or time limit or fun. What was I talking about? Oh, right. So I looked at the TV guide and saw the name of my favorite spinach-consuming hero, and I thought it was the cartoon, so I watched it. But it was some weird-ass 70s hippie stuff with the genie from Aladdin never opening his eyes, and everyone looked like they were doing a Goonies cosplay, but I actually thought it was pretty cool. So I watched it 5 more times that week. Beats homework. That movie was Popeye.
Welcome to The Hold Up. Each month, we pick a movie one of us remembers fondly but hasn't seen in years, watch it, and decide, does it hold up? I'm John Nelson.
And I'm John Longinot.
And we're back again, and it's been a month, and man, are we so well rested from not having to, oh Jesus, we were just here last
Welcome
week.
Welcome to the very special episode 51
Yay!
Of the Hold Up Podcast.
Holy
where we
cow,
do
folks.
A normal ass episode.
Where we chat about one movie, one time, that's it, and we're done. Before we get started, we got some emails at our email address, holduppodcast@gmail.com. Hey, Longino, you want to hit us with the first one?
Absolutely. So our first email comes from Mia, and she writes us, "Congrats, John times two.
Haha.
I've truly enjoyed listening to your journey through the holdup. I know it's late, blame summer break, though all I can think of when you announced the four-parter was the Indiana Jones movies.
Holy God.
I truly believe that your podcast will hold up when we look back 100 episodes from now. Congrats again, Mia." So Mia is sending us another guess on what are already in the can, already published
now. I'm beginning to think you people don't know of any quadrilogies except Indiana Jones.
I mean, it's a very popular one.
It sure is.
So sorry, Mia, you did not win, nor did you get the prize that Nelson was offering, the mystery prize.
But that was email 1 of 7.
It was.
And once we hit 7, somebody's getting some lucky something.
Here's email 2.
And here's email number 2.
And just to clarify, I did say that our 7th email is going to receive a special prize as bait for emails.
Right. So, and these two came in before people even knew we were doing that. So we already got a jump. So this one is from our old friend Ray Morton. We got a Ray Morton, John.
All right, Ray. Thank you.
Titled Mad Maxes. Hi, John and John. So glad you chose to do the Mad Max series, and I am really enjoying your conversations about the films. So far, I've only heard the first two, but eagerly looking forward to the next. A few mad bits to add to the discussion. George Miller shared your dissatisfaction with the narrative in Mad Max. Once the film was done, he realized that he really didn't know how to tell a story, or even what a dramatic narrative really was, and so was very dissatisfied with that aspect of the original film. Because of this, he was really surprised when it became a hit everywhere in the world, except the U.S., where it was dumped on the drive-in and groundhouse circuit in that horrible dubbed version that did the movie no favors. It certainly did not. In studying the reviews, he realized that he and his co-screenwriter James McCausland had unconsciously channeled many archetypal characters and story beats. Miller felt that this was the reason the movie worked for audiences, even though the narrative was so clumsy. He then set out to learn how to tell a story properly, and this study led him to the same place George Lucas wound up, Joseph Campbell, and the hero with 1,000 faces. Based on what he learned there, when the possibility of doing a sequel to Mad Max came up, Miller set out to employ what he had learned and consciously made the narrative more deliberately archetypal, more classical, and more mythic. I think he succeeded brilliantly. Along with Star Wars, I think it's the only film to employ Campbell's hero myth without turning it into rote formula. Keep up the good work, guys. Ray.
Oh, thank you, Ray. It's actually really fascinating that Ray brings up Joseph Campbell, who, you know, obviously is a film geek, is talked about a lot, but I actually just bought that book.
Oh, really?
Yeah, The Hero with 1,000 Faces. I've been reading it, so okay. It's just sort of well-timed. But yes, I completely agree. I think I even mentioned during our recording that
like, oh, this is just basically like a hero's journey, right, the, or the archetypal. I don't think I mentioned Joseph Campbell, but it was certainly on my mind.
Right.
So I'm glad Ray sort of picked up on that, because he's totally correct. That is what happened in The Road Warrior.
Yeah. Well, Ray also turned me on to a book that I actually managed to listen to in audible form before this podcast. It's called Miller and Max, and it's about the making of all four Mad Max movies. And mostly,
how appropriate.
Yeah. Well, it was funny because we'd gone through all this guessing. Like, well, I bet this happened, and I wonder if they had money, and this and that and the third. So
and
if you want the
answers,
probably
killed 20 people.
Right. And then, yeah, you find out about all the dead bodies, of which there were apparently none. People got severely injured on some of these, but nobody died to my recollection.
That's actually kind of incredible.
Well, actually, the funny thing is, like, they did Fury Road, and I guess they had, like, managed to do the whole thing with no injuries, no, like, serious injuries. And then the last thing they shot was, like, the giant war rig, like, flipping over and then sliding toward the camera. They wanted to do it for reals, and they're like, well, this is, like, the last big thing of the film. We don't want to fake it, so let's do this. But then, like, they had a moment of horror when, like, the thing flipped, and the guy, and it looked like the guy inside was bouncing around, and George Miller was like, you have got to be fucking shitting me. We went through this whole thing with no injuries, and now this guy's probably fucking dead. Turns out, though, he had forgotten they put a dummy in there for that very effect. The stunt driver was fine, 100%, so Fury Road has, like, zero major injuries, which
that's
is amazing.
That's pretty impressive.
Anyway, it's a great book. There's a lot of good information in it. Answers many of the questions that we sort of threw out into the hypothetical atmosphere. So if you were interested in all the true answers to all the questions that we posed, you should listen to that. I'm not going to go
research.
Into
research.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not.
We
gonna,
don't do that.
I'm not going to tell you the things that we got wrong, because fuck that shit. Let's move on to tonight's movie, Popeye. See, there's Longino getting us sued for copyright infringement.
Oh, shucks. Well, you know, we do play the trailer of every movie we watch, so yeah.
I know.
Shh, don't tell anybody.
Yeah, it's a big secret. All right.
Yes,
so, I mean,
Popeye. Robert Altman's Popeye.
Robert, yeah. Okay, so three words you never thought you would hear together before 1980. Robert Altman and fucking Popeye. Wow. So what, I mean, Longino, what is your experience with A, Popeye the Sailor Man, and B, Popeye the movie Sailor Man?
Certainly. Well, the Popeye the Sailor Man, I have to imagine my experience is the same as any child who was watched cartoons ever. Like, I watched Saturday morning cartoons and cartoons during weekdays and stuff, and I don't remember what channel or who licensed it or whatever, right. But Popeye was a pretty regular in those. I certainly saw many Popeye shorts,
right,
and they're all basically like the same shorts. You know, oh, hey, these bad guys are after olive oil, let me hit this can of spinach and then my muscles get really big and I kind of punch them out. And that's sort of what people know about Popeye.
Right. That, there you go. That's
certainly
the whole of Popeye from like 1960 to 1980.
Yeah, kind of covers it. And then it, exactly as I described in this intro, I turned to what was on the TV channel listing as Popeye in the TV guide, thinking I was just going to watch the cartoon. I was like, yeah, I love Popeye. Let's do it. And I had no idea this movie existed. I, you know, didn't know at all that there was a live action Popeye movie. And so this must have been in 1990 or something like that.
And you would be about,
I'd be like 10 years old, okay. 10, 11 years old. And I certainly knew who Robin Williams was,
right?
Just from life. You know, he's a pretty recognizable guy.
He was so super famous by that point.
I sort of recognize him. And this has to have been my first Robert Altman movie. I mean, when I watched it, I had no concept of who Robert Altman was.
Right.
Nor did I even know he directed it until many years later. I was doing one of those things where you're looking on IMDb and you're like, yeah, what did Robert Altman do? And then I'm like, fucking Popeye. Like, that was him? Had no idea.
Yeah. Well, I mean, for people who maybe don't know, Robert Altman is famous for, like, I don't know how to describe it, very languid movies about, like, very character oriented, not plot heavy at all. Like, MASH is one of his movies,
right?
The Player, that actually has a story, though. That was him, like, that was his comeback movie where he used a story. But like, a lot of his movies in the 70s were like, just like, here's a dude like walking down the street, or women talking right. about being women. It's just very esoteric.
Well, and ironically, even at 10 years old, I had actually heard the name Robert Altman because my mother was an extra in Nashville.
Oh,
Actually, a mutual friend of ours, Glenn Morgan.
Glenn Morgan.
Also, they had gone with my mom and actually Linda Barber, who's written into this podcast. So here, bringing
it's
the
all
whole
very
family
ancestral.
In. But they had gone to the Parthenon in Nashville and had been in the crowd while they were shooting the final scene of Nashville.
Oh, okay.
I think my mom. I don't think she was a huge Robert Altman fan necessarily. I think she was just tickled that they were making a movie in her, you know,
right, in
where
home
we
job.
Lived. And so that, so I had heard of Robert Altman, but I didn't connect those dots when I first saw this movie at all.
Right.
And I don't know. Like, how did you see Popeye? Have you ever seen it?
Therein lies a tale. When you were talking about Nashville, that lit up a flag in me, too, because, and this is very important for the story, my father was a huge fan of the movie Nashville. And I didn't know that or realize that until well into my adulthood when I first saw it. I didn't see Nashville until I was in my 20s or 30s. And then I watched it and I was like, holy shit, these are all the songs that my father used to sing when I was 5 years old.
Like, oh, wow, so he was a
and
big
I had,
fan.
Like, yeah, he was a huge, like, he had memorized the soundtrack of Nashville, which was like, wow. And, like, for those who don't know about that one, it's basically just a movie about country singers, and mm-hmm. each of the actors who played a country singer wrote their own songs for the movie. But what's interesting is I was about 7 when this movie hit the theaters, and my father took me and my... he would have to be like 3 years old brother to the movies.
Wow.
Because I remember all three, it was like a dude's day out, and like he took us to see a double feature of Popeye and the Zucker Brothers Airplane.
Oh, okay.
And
wow, both maybe sort of inappropriate, certainly for different reasons.
Right.
Like children seeing airplanes seems kind of off to me, but you know.
It was kind of perfect. I mean, it's kind of like there's a little bit of sexual innuendo and stuff like that.
There's literally nudity in it.
Well, yes, but there was nudity in every movie in the 70s and 80s, so that wasn't really... I mean, my father was a little embarrassed after that, but... yeah, the interesting thing was my experience with Popeye was I love the cartoon. Like when I was a kid, my two favorite things in life were like Popeye and the Incredible Hulk, who are basically the same character.
Oh, wow. Yeah, very similar.
It's like little guy getting picked on by a big guy.
One's like positive reinforcement, the other's negative reinforcement.
Right, exactly. And turns into something green happens and then they turn into giant strongmen and answer the question with violence. So then when we saw the movie, which is not only a live action version of Popeye, not only a musical, because
right.
this was also a musical,
it is.
But it is also not based on the cartoon, which had become the most popular version of Popeye to that point. But it was based on like the original comic strip, the Thimble Theater, which is like why the characters seemed to be acting so odd to me as a kid, because it's like, why is Popeye muttering to himself? Why is like, who are all these other characters?
Right.
I had no idea. Now, years later, I became a fan of the original comic strips of Popeye, and I've ended up collecting all the books of them. So going back to the movie later, I realized, they were doing like a spot on, like, this is Thimble Theater, the movie, basically.
Oh, really? This is like the Wachowskis in Speed Racer or something,
right.
Where it's like this incredibly honorable,
recreation. Like a super faithful adaptation.
I have almost no familiarity whatsoever with the comic strip. I only know the cartoon, so yeah. I wouldn't even know that. That's really interesting.
Yeah, so seeing it the first time, I actually liked Airplane better because I was very confused.
Sure.
Well, 7 years old, you're not going to be like, ah, shit, titties. You know,
well,
I mean,
Airplane's pretty great.
Well, Airplane is hilarious to a 7 year old who thinks he's in, especially when it's like, oh, I'm not supposed to be here. This is naughty. So, and my brother didn't understand a word because he's 3 or 4 years old.
Oh,
so,
wow.
What does he care? But it became like it was a real like memory point for me because it's like, wow, not only is this the first time I saw these two particular movies, I just remember that was like one of the few like times I went to the movies with my dad and my brother by ourselves. Yeah, it's just really loaded.
Gotcha.
And to add more load to the burden, I actually have not seen this movie. My dad passed away. It was one of his favorite movies. Popeye ended up being one of his favorite movies.
I did not know that. And by the way, I picked this. Like Nelson
yeah, this
did not
is,
pick this. I didn't know this history at all.
And I didn't tell him because I was I wanted this all to come out spontaneously. But yeah, this was like one of my father's favorite films in life. And so I've seen it many times, but I don't think I have seen it since his death.
Oh, wow.
Partly because it's like, well, it's not the same without him. But, you know, it's just one of those where it's like, oh, I just haven't gotten to it either. But it was one of those that like he would just pop it in just to, you know, feel better.
Right.
It was like his happy place movie.
Wow.
So that was crazy. And I'm hoping that it holds up because,
I can look at it with a nuanced eye
and say, well, the nostalgia is this, but the reality is that. I don't know.
I'm really interested to see how it goes. Before I get into my reasons for picking it, let's quickly explain to anyone out there who doesn't know what Popeye is. We've sort of kind of covered it, but the Popeye is obviously a comic strip and a cartoon character. He's a sailor who has a girl, a sweetheart named Olive Oil, and Olive Oil's continually sort of taken away,
always captured by a giant named either Bluto or Brutus, depending on what you're watching.
Yeah, for me it was always Bluto, but yeah, there's a big fat guy Bluto.
Yeah, Bluto in the movie.
Kind of a bad guy.
Yeah.
Oh, is that what it is? Okay. And then Popeye always is down and out, and then hits a can of spinach. It's his favorite thing. And there's literally a theme song. Da 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 da. He hits his spinage. It shows his muscle and like spinach in his muscle. And then he's doing roundhouse hits and stuff. Saves the day and saves Olive Oil. That's Popeye. And then the film is Robert Altman adapted it into live action. And it's pretty much checks all those boxes from what I remember. And maybe adds in a little like pirate treasure plot.
Yeah.
From what I recall.
There's a whole like Popeye is looking for his father who is Poop Deck Pappy.
Yes, I forgot that.
Played by Ray Walston, the late great Ray Walston, who is awesome. Everybody, the thing is about this movie, my memory is everybody is awesome as their character.
Right. Like, here, list out the cast.
Robin Williams is Popeye, doing great. Again, muttering to himself and making all these side comments, which are hilarious. Olive Oil, played by Shelley Duvall. There is no one in life who looks more like Olive Oil than she does.
Pretty perfect casting.
It's Ray Walston as Poop Deck Pappy. I forget the guy's name. Bluto was just a wrestler, I think. I don't remember his name.
Yes, he's sort of a strong man that was in that. And I think I've seen him in one or two other movies, not a lot of them.
Yeah, and when there's one that's like on the tip of my tongue. I remember him in it, and I can't remember what
I'll have to look this up because I don't remember. There's like an old cheesy-ass horror movie that a friend of mine showed me, and I remember watching going like, is that Bluto from Popeye? And then I looked it up and it was him, but it was something that I think inspired Eli Roth. Pieces? That might be the name.
Oh,
of it.
Interesting. Okay.
Pieces.
All right.
It's like a weird horror, like serial killer slasher horror movie.
Is that like pseudo famous horror, like the infamous Pieces, the one that like all horror movie aficionados love so much?
Maybe.
This is the one from like the '70s or something.
Yeah.
Like
I think Bluto may be in that.
Okay. Well, that
now,
maybe
I
that's
could be wrong.
Thinking.
I'll look it up. I might be wrong, but that's my memory.
Pieces is infamous, and you'll have to look it up for yourselves, folks. It's too detailed to go into here, but it's like a mainstay at like the New Beverly Cinema in L.A. So.
I think that's why I saw it. Someone was like, oh, you should see this.
It's sort of the Room of its time. That's why.
Yes.
it's kind of a
exactly.
goof.
I chose Popeye mainly because what I said is true, that I watched it thinking I was going to watch the cartoon. Was very surprised to find there was a live-action Popeye, was kind of weirded out by it, but oddly fascinated by it. And I can't describe exactly why. I think that's something I'm actually looking to find out tonight, because as a child, I couldn't really quantify what I liked about it. But there was something going on that was kind of making me feel weird.
Here's my
that I
thought,
liked.
Like thinking back on it, the movie is like it's got a plot. It's like, again, Popeye is searching for his father who knows where this secret treasure is and blah, blah, blah. But that overarching plot is sort of just like in the background. And then most everything else is just like it's this series of vignettes that sort of vaguely tie together, like Popeye's in a boxing match or Popeye is being attacked by dudes at the bar or whatever.
I wonder if it was my first like plotless movie.
Maybe.
You know?
Well, and again, it's Altman. So
right, which would fit.
He's the king of plotless movies. But I think the interesting thing is it plays like a series of Popeye cartoons, but it violates the structure that you were used to, which is, well, at the end of this, he's going to pop his spinach, knock everybody out and be gone. Whereas in the movie, he's just kind of a tough guy, beats everybody up without spinach until he gets to Bluto, who kicks the snot out of him.
Yes. I remember like a boxing match or something that he has with Bluto.
Yeah. I don't remember if he has the boxing match with Bluto. I think Bluto is engaged to Olive Oil.
Yes.
And Popeye pops into town and suddenly she's all Twitter-pated over him. And so Bluto is highly offended by that. So he, kicks the shit out of Popeye. His father's like telling him, you need to get your spinach. And he's like, spinach? I don't even eat the shit. Fuck. fuck that. Spinach is awful.
Right, right. Like, I remember that. But yeah, it's almost like it's like some Casino Royale thing where he's going against type, where you're like, what do you mean you don't like spinach? Spinach, you're Popeye. Like, right. What the fuck am I watching?
Yeah, it's basically the origin story of Popeye and his spinach.
And I remember that being interesting.
Like, yeah, it makes a little bit of sense. The funny thing is, like, the movie was made ostensibly for kids, but I think you appreciate it much more as an adult. Like, again, the songs are kind of like, as a kid, you're maybe like, well, I like the songs because they're catchy, but I don't get it. And then as an adult, you're like, oh, I hear what they're actually saying.
Well, I remember the songs being rather sweet and nice. And of course, I think the one I remember best is one that Paul Thomas Anderson used in Punch Drunk Love.
And all at once I knew at once, I knew he needed me. Until the day I die, I won't know why, I knew he needed me.
Like, literally just takes the song from Popeye that Olive Oil's singing and uses it, like, five times in the movie. Like, right. It's kind of brought it up. And I, for some reason, I actually remember seeing Punch Drunk Love, and then the Popeye song hit.
Right.
And something, like, deep down within my soul got touched by that. Like, I thought it was incredibly intelligent of Paul Thomas Anderson to take this, like, childhood song, and it evoked love in a way that I found weirdly powerful.
Yeah.
Because I hadn't heard that song in 10, 15 years when I watched Punch Drunk Love.
That's funny that it, like, to me, it seemed like a, because he did it also in Boogie Nights with the Transformers song, the,
yes.
You Got the Touch. So that was the second time for me he had done that, and it sort of had the same result, which is like, oh, I see, you're my age, and this is how you relate to, this is how you relate things, is these weird 80s nostalgia bits.
The other thing I'm thinking about of what I might have really liked about Popeye is it kind of had this, this is the best way I can describe it. I don't think it's exactly this, but Robert Altman's Popeye has the feeling of like a modern Wes Anderson movie.
Mm.
It's almost got this like Life Aquatic Steve Zissou kind of vibe.
Right.
It's not so, you know, like play manufactured, but it has this massive set.
Right.
That I remember with like ropes and all sorts of stuff in the mm-hmm. background, and it, the whole movie's on this like giant set that looks like the Waterworld stunt show, you know, at Universal. And I don't think I'd seen something like that before, where it's just this like, because it's a movie,
right,
but it's kind of like a play, and it's sort of not totally real.
Well, it's kind of what Richard Donner did with Superman. It's like, yes, everything in here is like kind of silly, or it's kind of cartoony, or kind of comic booky, but like we are going to invest whole hog in this. It's like verisimilitude. It's like,
yes,
the costumes are going to be the best they can be. People are going to look how they like Popeye in his giant bulgy arms. He looks like Popeye in the cartoon. It's like, yeah, a dude with like weird, you know, oversized forearms doesn't mean much, but when you see Robin Williams with him, you're like, what the
right, it's like
fuck?
Oddly disturbing.
Yeah, I mean, but they just go all the way.
It's not like the gritty real Popeye. It's not like the Popeye.
No.
like it, as if it's real. Like, it is very faithful to the weirdness and cartoonishness of it.
I mean, the only, I guess, gritty thing you could say is that it's just the cartoon translated into real life, and that is kind of off-putting.
Right. Just,
you know, you see, like, when they do The Simpsons and, like, and draw them as, like, real humans, you're like, oh, that's awful. Like, Homer just looks like Jabba the Hutt or something like that. You know, just, it was never meant to look real, so, like, translating it to real life has just an off-putting effect. But there's something about the way that everybody invests in their character. I think what's going to happen is we're going to go back tonight, and it's not only going to be like, oh, it's Robin Williams and this and that, but we're going to recognize a lot of like character actors, and we're going to, oh my God, that's that guy or that woman.
Right. I could see that.
That we know from other movies, probably other Robert Altman movies, and just didn't recognize them because they're so buried underneath these characters and the makeup and costumes and stuff.
And the thing is, as a child, I would have zero appreciation for the production value or like crazy sets or something.
Right.
Actually, a similar thing happened when we watched Hook.
Right.
Like, when I watched Hook as a kid, I was just, yeah, whatever, you know. But watching as an adult, I was able to see this, like, very expensive set and kind of go, wow, like, there's a lot of work went into this.
Well, there's a whole story. I don't remember it all, but it's in one of those, like, 70s Easy Riders, Raging Bulls books where it just talks about, like, the cast goes to, like, Malta or something like that, or Balta or some other land, and they build, like you say, this just giant set. And then proceed to snort all the cocaine in the world and film this movie. And it's just, apparently it was just like a den of debauchery.
Yeah,
and just
it.
Like
for the children.
Right. And just money just flying out the window. And this is, I guess this is part of why Altman sort of had a nadir in the 80s, because this movie was supposed to be like a big hit and it wasn't. So... And then he disappeared for a while, and then he did The Player, and back on top again.
Got it.
I mean, this guy's done like 400 movies.
Well, sure.
He's done a ridiculous amount of movies.
He's not hurting for movies.
But I guess that leads to the question of the night. Hey, John Longinot, is Popeye going to hold up?
Oh, man. Here, this is a question. I'm going to say yes. And the reason I think that is because I think if it was really bad, I wouldn't have this itch to watch it again. Like, there's a lot of dumb movies I saw as a kid that I've never looked back on.
Right.
This has been under my skin of, like, I should see if that's good.
Right.
So I'm going to kind of go with my instincts on that. And just for that reason, none alone, I'm going to say it's going to hold up.
Great. I'm going to agree with you because, of course, I have all this like backstory and all this nostalgia for it. So I agree. I think it's going to hold up. But, I have much more... memory to draw upon.
Sure.
That I think you do, because you watched it apparently 5 times in 1 week, and I watched it, you know, like 50 times over my childhood or whatever it was.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's interesting because, I mean, obviously, if it's your dad's favorite movie, you probably know it pretty well. This is like, I couldn't really tell you a scene. I have like vague. I remember an octopus. I remember a boxing ring.
Right.
I remember a weird set with ropes. I remember, you know, I'll pay you Tuesday for a hamburger today.
Oh, that's even a song, too.
Is it?
It's in one of the songs.
That's it. I remember his dad in like a submarine or something. Maybe that's where I'm getting Life Aquatic from.
Yeah.
They're on some boat or submarine or something. I
think it's a boat. I don't think it's a submarine. But
I think they're looking for treasure. I could be wrong.
Right.
We'll find out.
Yes. Everybody is after this long-lost treasure. I believe it's the Commodore's long-lost treasure. And oh, my God, who's the Commodore? And spoiler, folks, it's Popeye's father.
Makes sense.
I've already sort of spoiled that anyway.
Oh, no!
Holy shit! But the search for the treasure is, again, just sort of in the background. Everything else is about, like, you know, Popeye beating people up and everybody having a good old time singing and I don't even know what all, so...
Well, maybe we should go find this treasure for ourselves.
Oh, you think so?
Mm-hmm.
We'll be right back.
What am I? I'm Popeye, the sailor. And I am what I am, what I am, and I am what I am. And that's all that I am, because I am what I am. You got it?
I think so, yeah.
I must trust only, baby. You're a baby, it says here, right there, right.
Robin Williams. Shelley Duvall.
You're falling
behind! In Popeye.
Get away!
I'll leave. We're back from Sweet Haven, folks.
Oh, man. What a rocking, wholesome, sweet feeling good time
that
of
is,
cocaine wonder.
That is the oddest fucking movie, man. It's
different.
I've seen it so many times, and yet I watch it and I'm like, I feel like I've been taking cocaine for the last hour because nothing exactly makes sense. And
yeah. I kind of like how weird and offbeat it is. It's a very offbeat movie.
It is way off the beat. I mean, there's a weird vibe about the whole thing, right? It doesn't...
Yes.
Nothing exactly adds up in that movie,
Not
right?
really, no. Well, it's sort of... It's like if a film was a schizophrenic just kind of muttering on a street corner... And it doesn't make a terrible amount of sense, but it sure is interesting. Like, you know, that's
right.
Kind of, that's just everything is just like, yeah, I guess that's what you say. Oh, I would have punched you in the face. Oh, I don't know. Like, it's just like a lunatic rambling.
I know, but everybody's rambling. It's not just Popeye. It's
There's no like straight person in the whole thing. Like, everyone's just like, I mean, a cartoon, which obviously is based off a cartoon, so it makes it fits. But yeah, no, everyone's a weirdo, like just totally animated weirdo.
And the weird and the style of shooting is almost like it's almost like he's trying to shoot it as if it's a play because he keeps going to wide shots.
Yes, it's a very like medium shot, wide shot movie. There's almost no close ups. And when there are, they're kind of disturbing.
Like, yeah, it's almost too close. It's almost like no.
Yeah, you're seeing like Robin Williams' weird eye prosthetic, and he's wrinkling his face in a way that just it's like something is wrong here. I don't know what exactly. Everything's just weird. He's got this like orange yellow hair.
Yeah.
The muscle thing is like you literally feel like you're doing shrooms or something and just watching like a weirdo. I don't know. It's so unique, I think, in that way. There's not a lot of movies like that at all.
I would dare say there's no other movie like that.
Yeah.
I mean, again, it's got the Altman sensibility. It's when you look at it and you recognize other Altman films, like now I've seen like other ones like McCabe and Mrs. Miller and shit like that, and it looks like those movies.
Right.
Because he does that a lot. He does like those big wide shots and people sort of acting in the frame. It's you know, he didn't start like moving the camera around a whole heck of a lot until
sure.
like the later part of his career, but it and people talking over each other. I mean, he's kind of famous for his overlapping dialogue.
Yes.
Like people sort of someone's talking over here and someone's talking over there and you're not really following
yeah.
a single person.
It's kind of just a room full of people and weird chatter, you know, and just kind of oddball stuff going on.
Yeah
it's so busy. Like
yeah.
every like Olive Oil's party or the restaurant or whatever. It's not like, oh, hey, Popeye walks in, talks to someone and leaves. It's just like a menagerie of people doing backflips and, you know, miming and like,
yeah.
oh, you know, falling and catching bottles that are thing. And, oh, I'm chasing my hat around town and all like it's just so busy.
Yeah. And there's like this guy that's always in the back of the front. There's some like extra that he must have fallen in love with because he's in like 80% of the movie in the back just smiling, just here I am. He's like the Where's Waldo of every frame.
Right.
It's like there he is. Yeah. And the production design is fucking insane. It's
yes.
almost, it's like George Miller. It's all, you know, it's almost
yes.
Mad Max.
Yeah, we sort of talked about before we went in. I was like, I sort of remember this village or town. It's kind of like the Waterworld set or something. That was not even far off at
all. That wasn't
all.
A joke.
Like,
it was nuts.
Like they showed the town. I was like, holy shit. How long did this take to make? This is gigantic. And then I look it up and it said like 152 carpenters worked like for what was it?
it was seven months
on that thing.
7 fucking
like almost
months.
A year just making this town.
Yeah,
for the movie. And I was like, holy shit. And apparently it was in Malta, correct?
Malta, I think. Yes.
Yeah, so I guess this, I don't know if it's still there, but at least for many years it seems like this was like a tourist attraction.
Yeah,
people
would,
visited because
yeah.
it's like come to the Popeye town. the thing, even IMDb trivia even mentioned that they bought functioning boats.
Oh, yeah.
And then that's like the sunken boats. You see, they literally just like cracked them open and sunk them.
Oh, Jesus.
And they just bought old boats and stuff. Like, it's
see,
crazy.
That was the 70s. It's
yes.
way too much money, way too much cocaine. And this is a Robert Evans production. I'd forgotten about that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you had made some cocaine jokes and then right in the opening credits, produced by Robert Evans. And I was like, oh, this explains a lot.
Yeah, there's where all the cocaine came from and all the weird ideas. Yeah.
I think the only grounded character was Sweet Pea the baby. Like, it was just being a baby.
That's
you know?
True. It's like there's no prosthetics. There's no,
yeah.
even the costume is sort of like, well, a baby could wear that. I mean, everybody else is in this weird, like, weird costumes, prosthetics,
right.
and
actually,
hair.
So we actually forgot about this character, but Sweet Pea is this child that is orphaned and given to Popeye. And in any other movie, you know, Sweet Pea's mom does some bag switcheroo. And leaves a child with them, you would think, like, there would be a plot of, I don't know, like, finding the mother or reuniting them or something. Nope. It just, here's a child. Okay, thanks. And now, like, oh, I think he, you know, he's got my looks. Oh, I'm the mama. And, yeah, it's like, okay.
Yeah.
That's it.
And that's like, half the movie is, like, again, it's these weird vignettes. It's like, oh, they get the baby, and then they discover the baby is psychic. So they take the baby to the track. Someone sees the baby at the track, and they kidnap him. They take the baby to the Commodore, who is Popeye's father. Popeye goes to rescue the baby from his own father, and then chaos ensues. I mean, that's the weirdest part. And then the chaos
yes.
starts. It's already cranked up to 11, and then the weirdness really kicks. Like, but so there was something about Ray Walston and his energy that like kind of tied the whole thing together. Because I feel like if he wasn't there, the chaos that was going on around him would not make a lick of sense.
I mean, that's a tough role to be like, you are going to be Robin Williams' father.
Right.
And you're going to have to match whatever the fuck he's doing. Uh-huh. And Robin Williams went ham in this shit. Like, he nuts. Like, it was just, oh, you want me to be Popeye? Okay. Oh, frame fucking one, he rowboats in and he's just but what's interesting is he kind of goes back and forth between this high energy and super low key energy.
Yeah.
Most of the movie is him like mouthing off, muttering, making fun of everybody and then like kind of not hearing him.
Yeah, just
and
him muttering,
just being, "Oh, I almost punched you in the face. Oh, you looks like he's just all puns
like,
and stuff."
Yeah, like Olive Oil almost you know, she scares him and then he almost punches her and then she says, "Oh, you scared the wits out of me."
He's like, "I almost punched the wits out of you.
Almost knocked him out of you too."
Yeah, but it's like he's talking to us, the audience. Like, right. No one in the movie acknowledges his dialogue, but we laugh at it being like, oh, that's funny.
Yeah.
But yeah, for Ray to play this father figure, a lot rests on that.
Yeah.
Because if that performance is flat or not living up to this hype of the Commodore or the mystery man, and he totally brings it. Like, he has an entire... just song about kids these days. He's literally channeling Dick Van Dyke from Bye Bye Birdie. Just doing this like, kids, what's the matter with kids today?
Right.
Kids, dad blast them. They're going to lead you to ruin. That's what they're going to do, lead you to ruin. They cry at you when they're young. They yell at you when they're older. They borrow from you when they're middle-aged. And they leave you alone to die without even paying you back. Children, boys.
But what's weird is he's ranting like a lunatic from the widest shot I've ever seen.
They're on a boat.
Not even a master. It's like literally there's a football field away.
Yeah.
And just in the super wide that's clearly zoomed in, he's just singing this song. Not even singing, like just doing like a beat slam poetry dialogue
kind of monologuing over music.
It was
and
so interesting.
Like, everybody's running around and tripping and falling
no
over
one's
shit.
Paying him any attention. That's the thing. Everyone who's singing or doing anything is doing it to the audience, and no one in the actual movie is like usually paying that much attention to them at all.
The person who's singing is just in their own world. And the weirdest thing is, like, it's almost like a choreographed dance, except it's not. It's like,
right.
You know, everything falling and all the chaos that's going on. And because it looks choreographed, but it isn't like a dance, there's some weird cognitive dissonance about that, because it looks, on the one hand, really kinetic, but also oddly flat.
Yes. You know what it reminded me of? And early on when Popeye walks in, they do this bit where he drops something and there's a piano falling and he
sees a pipe
down
on the ground. Yeah,
he picks up this pipe and just misses his piano hitting him. And actually, that to me sort of sets the template of what a lot of the movie feels like, which to me is like Buster Keaton.
Right.
Like, straight up. It has that old silent movie, a house just fell and I'm in the window, whatever, that kind of feeling to it, where it's meant to be spontaneous, but is clearly staged.
Right.
It's like stage spontaneity. And I think that's what you mean by, like, it just feels weird.
No, that's a good way to put it. Sort of silent film, like, antics. Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure.
And I had remembered there being songs and stuff in it. I didn't quite remember that it is a full-fledged musical, just head to tails.
Yeah, but the songs one doesn't have anything to do with another. It's not like
really.
A lot of music. Like, modern musicals, there's a lot of, like, sort of repetition of themes or stuff kind of weaves in and out. And
well, you had maybe the Sweet Haven kind of theme,
right?
That one repeated.
That
had
one
a
repeated
refrain.
Once or twice.
The songs are a little odd. They're almost, I'm not trolling, but they're like against expectations.
Right.
Like Olive Oil's song about Bluto.
Right.
Which is like the second or third song in the movie is like a non-song.
Right.
Like, she just keeps going like, he's large.
Yeah, she's trying to describe all of his best assets.
He's large.
He's tall. Good looking. He's large. And he's large. He's large.
it's like this would be the song that is in West Side Story would be like, Maria, I just met a girl named Maria. Let me list like all the millions of things I love about Maria. And for her to have this like anti song, it's like, yeah, I love him. He's mine.
Right.
He's large. And that's all I got. Bye. You know,
well, it's kind it's of that 70s like anti, you know, whatever they, you know, we're going to deconstruct the musical. It's almost like they're deconstructing the musical, but not deconstructing it toward a purpose, except
right.
for, except for comedy.
Yes.
But not, but the comedy's not even like straight up comedy. It's almost like elbowing you and like, get it. Right, because they're not, because we're
right,
she's not,
well, yeah, because nothing's, I mean, it's a funny movie and we were definitely laughing, but
for
it's
sure.
not like you, deconstructing is a really good way to put it. It's just odd.
Yeah.
Like it's not, it doesn't have the rhythms of like, you know, dialogue punchline, laugh break, you know, that
right,
it's just muttering and,
yeah.
and sputtering and oddities and it's like going to, you know, a freak show and just like kind of giggling because you're uncomfortable. Like it's really interesting.
Yeah, because there's a lot of stuff like the beats that you would think of, like, oh, Sweet Pea gets captured, Popeye goes to rescue him, you know, Bluto's kicking the snot out of him and then forces him to eat spinach, and then suddenly, oh my god, he eats the spinach and explodes with power, hits Bluto, hits the octopus, it's over.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it was like
just done,
done
in a second. And
like,
then they just sing like the song, the
right.
Popeye song.
Oh, Popeye.
He's Popeye ah! the Sailor Man.
Oh, my hero.
He's Popeye the Sailor Man. He's strong to the finish, cause he eats his spinach. Yeah. He's Popeye the Sailor.
I think we both read this. The reason it was so abrupt at the end is because they ran out of money.
Right.
And I don't know that they did a good
Robert
job
of Evans
hiding that.
Somehow spent the budget on something other than an octopus.
Something other than the octopus got paid for, yeah. Yeah, and then they sing the song, and it's a weird... That's the only time that anybody is sort of doing anything like as a musical. It's
yes.
like they're sort of dancing and singing together. But oh, but the point I was going to make before is like when you're deconstructing this musical, it's almost like what he did with Nashville. It's where he took non-singers and non-performers and then made them sing these songs. So like
right.
Olive Oil is obviously like the her voice is annoying and like on purpose annoying when she's singing.
You're talking about Shelley Duvall.
Shelley Duvall. Well,
yes.
I mean, I'm talking about Olive Oil's songs.
I think in a weird way, she's the one that works the best. She's the one that I think has the most heart in her songs, and
right.
I believe it the most.
Yeah.
Everyone else is kind of like...
Well, Popeye mutters through his. Ray Walston mutters through his.
Yeah.
Bluto is very obviously dubbed
yeah,
by somebody
that ain't
else.
That guy. Yeah.
I mean, you know what I mean.
He's mean.
You know what I say.
He says he's mean.
You know what I mean.
He's mean.
So I think for some reason Shelley Duvall's, I think those are why her songs are the memorable ones. I think that's why it's the one in Punch Drunk Love or the
right.
one we're talking about. He's large. And then the other one, like, he needs me, he needs me, he
right.
needs me.
He needs me, 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 he needs me.
But even that one, it is offbeat and like, it has the trappings and it feels like a normal song, but it's just odd.
Yeah, it's the only time the movie slows down, and it's the only time in the movie where there is only a single kind of focal point, which is her singing the song and sort of dancing in the moonlight. And the movie does like a slow to a crawl, and it feels way different.
Yes.
And I mean, I'm sure that's intentional because you're supposed to be like, okay, this is where they know that they're acknowledging their love for one another in this odd cartoony fashion.
I do think the most it ever felt like the cartoon that I remember is during the boxing match.
Yes.
There's sort of this bit where, yeah, like a boxer comes to town and they're having some contest, like knock him out, and Olive Oil's
You're already explaining more than the movie did.
Sure. Olive Oil's brother gets punched to oblivion, like literally to the sun. And then they have this bit where Popeye jumps in the ring, and it's actually really great because he's in his sailor outfit and he springs like Superman in the old TV show, like clearly jumping on some trampoline. And then lands in the ring, and all of a sudden he's just head to toe dressed like a boxer, like Batman down the ramp, you know, like, oh, here I am. And that whole time they go da 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 da, and he's going ah ka 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 ka, and Olive Oil Shelley Duvall is doing this thing where she's going, oh no, look out,
Popeye,
no. And that was hitting something in my brain, like, yes, this is it,
right.
is the cartoon, and she did a great job of like that, and. I, you know, I appreciated that for some reason. Like, there was a weird nostalgia stroke in that moment that I don't think the whole movie has, but yeah. I felt it there.
Well, and her, when she was kidnapped at the end, when they
did
the thing they do in every cartoon, which is like Bluto kidnaps her and she's like,
bye-bye,
tied up and yelling and screaming. She was committing to that one wholesale too. But to go back to the boxing thing, that was the one where they used every cartoon gag, like, you know, the big giant boxer, you know, he's got his mom on the side, played by Linda Hunt.
Yes. I noticed, I saw her in the movie and was like, is that Linda Hunt? And not only was it Linda Hunt, it's her first movie.
Which is crazy. And I was like, amazing. And she looks like she's playing an 85-year-old. And I'm like,
yes. She's kind of always been 85,
She's only like 30-something in that movie, but they make her up to be 85, and then she's 85 for the rest of her life. But, like, you know, the big boxer, like, swings at Popeye and misses, punches out his own mother. You know,
by the way, anyone who doesn't necessarily know, Linda Hunt is a very famous actress who famously got a Academy Award for playing another gender. She played a man in The Year of Living Dangerously.
Oh, I'd forgotten.
And received
that.
An Academy Award for Best Supporting Actress, even though she played a man. And then I know she's in like Silverado and a bunch of million.
She was in
other
the
movies.
Like The Practice, I think. She was a judge on that show for like, and she was very memorable in that. Yeah, she's just in a bunch of, you know, you'll see her and you go, oh, that's her, right?
Yes.
But yeah, the big boxer punches out his mom, and then he punches Popeye in the face, and Popeye just takes it. His face doesn't move.
Sells it.
Yeah, he just takes the punch once, twice, and then like winds his hand up and spins it. You know,
literally cranks it, like one hand turns it like it's a spinning top. He's
like
cranking
dervish.
Up, and then it's spinning. Yeah, there's all kinds of that, like. Weird, obviously, couldn't actually be happening. Like, oh, his pipe is a periscope. That must be the submarine I remember.
Yes.
It's just Popeye and his pipe periscope. And just super cartoony things that are obviously not real at all.
We noticed throughout the film, there weren't that many close-ups, but when there were close-ups, they were usually on people's feet.
Yes.
Which was...
A lot of Olive Oil's feet.
A lot of Olive Oil's feet.
And her shoes.
And it's an odd choice, but oddly, it's helped sell the cartoonishness because their feet are even cartoony.
Yeah, because especially the boots Olive Oil had were very cartoonish.
Yeah, they just are big and cartoony and puffy, and they also have her... I mean, everybody in the movie sort of does this, but she also walks in such a way that it's cartoon. It's not... Nobody, like, goes...
Oh, yeah.
Foot, you know, just walks one foot
There's
in front of the other.
There's literally, like, a five-minute segment where she's just bumbling around. Like, that's the thing. She can't... Her feet are crossed, and she can't uncross them, and she's going...
So focusing on the feet is not... It weirdly helps sell the cartoonishness, but it's an odd choice because once I started noticing that there were feet close-ups, and I'm like, okay, every time he pops to him, I'm like, I noticed. And John's
I know we started
about,
making Tarantino
yeah,
jokes.
Making Tarantino
like, oh,
jokes.
Guest directed.
Yeah, it was an interesting but odd choice. All of this is like interesting but odd choices. Like, again, why try and make it look real?
Are they interesting? Here's my question. Are they interesting and then also happen to be odd, or are they interesting because they are odd? Maybe. I would actually think it's the latter. Like, to me, what made the movie interesting was how odd it was, and I sort of appreciated that. To me, the only movie I can conceive of that feels kind of like this movie is the Wachowski Speed Racer, where I believe I did bring that
up. You did mention it, yeah.
And now that I've seen this movie, I even more support that idea. Like just this full commitment to the cartoon or whatever the source material is, beyond all logic and reason.
Right.
Like flying in the face of any adaptation of just like, well, changing anything and just being like, here it is, enjoy.
Yeah, no, I think you kind of hit it. It's like in most adaptations take the source material and like, okay, well, this is good.
Yeah, this is great, but obviously we're making a movie
here.
You
can't make a movie out of that, though, so let's do this. And Popeye just took it and said, no, we're adapting it exactly kind of as is, and that's how we're...
Well, I think what's interesting is why make it live action, right? Like, the purpose of making something live action and adapting in that way is to give it a more realistic feeling.
Right.
So there's this weird dissonance between, you know, the cartoonish style of it, the just utter refusal to do anything except this crazy cartoon style, but you're looking at film of real people doing it. You can watch a cartoon and some psycho drew it and you're just like, yeah, okay, whatever. But when you see like mimes, you know, going down the street like lunatics, you're just like, this is so fucking weird. It's like a Twilight Zone episode.
Yeah, and making it a musical is an odd choice too, because it's not like the cartoons are musicals. It's like they every once in a while he sings on Popeye the Sailor Man.
Yes,
but usually
I think in a way that had to do with how the movie got made. I was reading a little more trivia that I guess Paramount was upset that they lost the bid for Annie. And Robert Evans was in some meeting like, hey, okay, you didn't get any, but like, what do you have the rights to? We'll do a musical too. So I think it's kind of one of those, like, the prerequisite was musical, and then Popeye kind of got grafted onto it.
But then they got the guy who, like, he's the guy who did the Midnight Cowboy soundtrack, right?
Yes.
Everybody's talking.
Everyone was high. I don't know.
I mean, seriously, everybody is out of their goddamn mind in this movie. And this is the movie that I had the strongest pull of nostalgia for, because, you know, obviously, like we discussed, I've seen it many times, and you know, obviously it's a family favorite. So, like, watching it with like objective eyes was really difficult, because it was tough to put myself in the position of like, what do I really think of this, when my heart is just saying, eh, just go with it. Because the modern me is like, well, if I saw this now, I'd probably think that was kind of goofy, or that wasn't enough, or this was too, you know, or that was funny, or whatever. You know, modern me would have a different opinion, but I couldn't, unlike most of the films we watch, I couldn't quite tap into a objective point of view for this one. It was odd.
Sure. Well, I had no trappings of nostalgia from a family heirloom movie that's like of vital importance. I had no loyalty.
Right.
And I felt very entertained by it and really enjoyed my time with it. So I don't think you're cuckoo.
Okay.
Like, I think there is something there. I'm curious, do you know what your dad really saw in it, or why it made him so happy now that you've seen it?
I mean, again, I could not fucking tell you, honestly. Other than maybe it's just
It's fun.
It's fun. And maybe he liked, maybe my dad was like a closet Altman fan or something. I don't know. My dad was a very, you know, he was a product of his generation, which is like, he told me some things about himself. But usually, I was 12 years old before I found out my dad was in the Navy at one point. So.
Oh, maybe there it is. Maybe he appreciates a fellow sailor.
He likes sailors. That's what it is. I don't know, though. He was a very complicated human being, you know, as we all are. But and as his son, I didn't. I'm starting to realize in my old age, as I become much more like him, that I didn't really know him the way that I thought I knew. You know, I knew him as his son. So
So
I couldn't tell you why I can tell you why I like it, but I think it's a different reason. I like it because it's odd and it's weird. And maybe he liked that, but he liked the music too. He really liked, he would sit and listen to the soundtrack sometimes.
Wow.
He had a record, you know, that vinyl of it. So there was something about the music. I guess the music is the key here for him. He just really likes the music, and he likes the musical aspect to it. And maybe he just liked the show of it. Maybe that's it. I don't know. And maybe he has an affinity.
I think there's nothing wrong with sincerely enjoying the movie for what it is.
For sure. I mean,
we can sit here and, you know, crack wise about how weird it is. But, I think in a way we're kind of confused by it because we expect more, I guess, or different. And I totally can see how it can just be enjoyed straight.
Right.
Like, unironically, just enjoy it. I can see that.
I mean, maybe it's weird because I think most adults of the time did not like it. Like,
right.
I think my mom thought he was crazy for that. So, I mean, maybe that's the perspective I'm trying to reconcile.
Sure.
Is like, well, my dad loved it and he didn't give a shit who told him otherwise. They'd be like, you're out of your mind. That movie's terrible. He's like, whatever. Go fuck yourself.
Did he, like, after saying that, mutter something to the side?
Well, dude, my dad muttered like Popeye to begin with. My dad was basically Popeye's.
All right.
He would mutter to...
Sweepy, John.
Let me tell you a little story about my father. This is... God bless him. My father, when he... every time he had to go to the store, my mom would send him to the store, and she would say, okay, I need this, and I need this, and he'd start to leave, and then she'd say, oh, and I need this, and I need this. And he would mutter under his breath. And she couldn't hear what he said. She knew he was muttering something, but he wouldn't say it loud enough for her to hear. And she's just like, he's just fucking with me or whatever. And I was sitting on the floor playing my games or whatever. So I'd see him out the door or whatever. And then my grandmother, his mother, came to town to visit. And my mom was like, oh, well, I need this and I need that. And, oh, wait, before you go, I need this. And he was very, you know, he nodded politely and didn't mutter under his breath because his mom was watching. And then I guess I looked up and said, horse shit, because my dad had forgotten to say the magic words. So my dad was like the dirty Popeye, just muttering obscenities under his breath.
So, I can see why he liked the movie.
Yeah, see?
Man, that makes sense.
Honestly, talking about it.
That's what's funny about Popeye in the movie.
Like, it is. It's 100% like what makes Robin Williams like sing in this role. It's him being just like obnoxiously like muttering about through the whole thing. Mm-hmm. Like you say, he's sort of the Greek chorus of the whole thing, but only halfway. Like sometimes he's involved with the action and then other times he's making like he doesn't.
I'd say 80% of the movie is him just muttering to the side. Like that is most of the movie.
The hilarious thing is he obviously likes olive oil, but he keeps making fun of her and almost in a way where he's like mean to her about like he keeps making fun of her name. Like in the beginning he's like, olive oil, that sounds like some kind of lubricant. And then later on she's like, what kind of he names the baby Sweepy. She's like, what kind of name is Sweepy? And he's like, what do you want me to call him, baby oil? Because he's the only one like to everybody
love
in this
of his life
name, yeah. Everybody in this family's name is oil. And even at one point I think he says to her, your name's olive oil. And she's like, what is the big deal? And he's like, olive oil. Like just, he keeps trying to like get her in on the joke and she's just completely oblivious. Maybe that's it. Maybe Popeye is sort of like in on the joke.
He kind of is, honestly.
He's closer to the audience, but he's still kind of he's still kind of in this world too.
Oh, sure.
I mean, it's an odd dance that he does, but it's somehow, I mean, it's Robin Williams, so it works for him. I don't know.
Yeah, anyway. I dare say I don't know anyone else that could even have pulled that off, really. Like, Robin Williams did a pretty great job with that.
Yeah. Okay, well, I think we've squeezed enough blood from this stone. John Longino, what did you think? Did that movie hold up?
I think it did. I think it definitely did. I don't think for the same reasons I originally liked it. I mean, my memory of it as a child was just sort of enjoying it as a cartoon. This time, I think I enjoyed it much more as just such a strange piece of art.
Yeah.
And I like strange art, so I'm into it.
Yeah, the funny thing is, like I say, I'm sort of torn in a lot of ways. I'm like the child in me is just like, yeah, sure, holds up phenomenally. The older me is like, does it? I'm not sure, but I'm willing to lean on the side of holds up, if only because I don't have any better reasons why it doesn't. So,
well, it doesn't sound like a strong hold up.
Maybe it's not a strong holds up, but it's still like, I mean, like you said, we had fun. It was never boring. I can fall on it holds up.
I can't believe I got to do 50 more episodes with this guy. Oh, I'm sorry. I say something.
All right. Well, great. So we got another double holds up, but a sort of like strong plus weak sauce holds up.
Yeah, it's a tipsian and toppling down the boardwalk holds up.
It's a tepid holds up. Congratulations, Popeye.
Woo-hoo.
You made it into the pantheon. Oh, man. So next month is Halloween, John Longino. And
yes, Halloween.
And what are we going to do? We're going to not tell the audience what we're doing.
Well, we're going to sort of tease you all with the idea that obviously for October, we always do a spooky movie. But we will leave it at that. A mystery to be uncovered when the devil walks in October.
Now somebody will write and say, House of the Devil. Devil's Race.
I saw the devil.
Devil's the Wears a Thousand Faces. So send in those five more emails so we can get to seven and throw your guesses out for Halloween.
Where can they email?
They can email you at holduppodcast@gmail.com or you can go to holduppodcast.com and you get to see our Instagram, our Twitter, and all the other social media sites. Thank you all for listening so much. And until next time.
Nobody moves. Nobody gets hurt.